Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Savage Nation. Here's the good news. There is no good news. It's all bad news. Welcome to the program. The top 0.1% of American taxpayers, 0.1%, the top, pays more income tax than the bottom 80%. And yet we have to listen to the musings of one of the biggest con men in history telling us that everyone should pay more taxes and pay their fair share while he avoids taxes. We have the most astonishing time in the history of man, when the biggest crooks, the biggest con men, are now acting as sort of senior advisors to the White House, you remember when Henry Kissinger was marched around the media as sort of the elder wise man of America, till he hid when it turned out that he was basically fronting for China in America, and then Kissinger wasn't seen much after that. He just continued to rake the money in on behalf of companies in China. And so Kissinger disappeared as sort of the elder statesman of America. Now we have this shocking realization that one of the worst men in the history of the world, George Soros, who funds the most despicable left-wing fanatics in the history of the world, and who I think single-handedly elected Obama, is now being quoted as the billionaire investor without any reference to the fact as to how he made his billions of dollars. It's amazing to watch this, which is why I don't want to talk about it. Instead, what I'm going to talk about is, are two very personal things. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty much bored of politics. You know, if there was something important politically, I'm sure I would tell you about it. And you've seen all the news by now. You know Greece is burning because the lazy Greeks don't want to work. They don't want they don't want to work. They want to continue on eternal vacations and endless pensions and go on vacations in the EU. And they don't want any austerity whatsoever, so they're trying to burn their own country down, including 10 neoclassical buildings. The very edifices that make Greece Greece were burnt by the vermin in the gutters of Greece because they just don't want to work. Very much like the 47 to 48% of Americans who pay no federal income taxes, who are being pandered to by Warren Buffett, George Soros, Barack Hussein Obama, and the entire crew of puppets on NBC and MSNBC. Instead, I want to talk about the fact that my little dog Teddy was bitten by another dog, and we've been nursing him since Saturday, and the fact that my observations of visiting a friend who's, I think, right now under a cancer surgeon's knife for the last 7 hours, and the effects that it had upon me going to see my friend in the hospital Saturday at UC Med Center. Now, here's a man who I've known for a long time. I mean, I'm not personally close with him on an everyday basis. We lost touch with each other, blah, blah, blah. But then he went into the I heard he was going to the hospital for, you know, I don't want to get into details, but let's put it this way. The tumor had fused some of his vertebrae, and it had to be removed, and it was an emergency, and they were going to perform surgery. You know who was in the hospital? Here's a man who's given of himself his whole life. Nobody was in the room with him except his son and a secretary. And I said, well, this can't be. You know that long walk down the hall of a hospital when you're going to visit a friend or a loved one? And you peer into every room as you go by, and you wonder what the person behind the curtain is suffering from, what that person what the fears are in that person's head. I mean, I don't know about you. When I walk down a hospital corridor and you look at the curtains, don't you ask yourself, I wonder what he or she is in here for? I wonder if they're going to live or they're going to die. Have you noticed that some of them are alone staring at the ceiling? Some of them are surrounded by a group of friends or family and such, and you ask yourself about the meaning of life, and you ask yourself, what does it mean to give so much to people and get nothing at the end, but nothing but a television set and an empty wall. And then the dog, okay? It's not a very big dramatic story, but you know he's my little love of my life. He's my 11-pound Teddy. And I know many of you have come to love him. Teddy is probably the most popular dog in the United States of America, maybe even better known than Bo. I haven't met Bo. I don't know very much about the White House dog. I'm sure he's a nice little guy. Most of them are. But I've always feared, because Teddy is so small, you know, he puts on a big show, which is why I love him, because he's so little underneath all that hair. In fact, when we go swimming, he tries to jump in the pool, and when he does, which I don't let him because he drinks the water, he looks like a rabbit, basically. I mean, he's a skinny little guy, but nothing deters him. You know, they have a lot of guts, these little dogs, to get up every day and go run around. So I've always feared him getting bitten by another dog, a bigger one, because I lost a Yorkie when I was very young in Queens, New York. I was walking in the street with a friend, and this little Yorkie was on a leash. And before I could even blink, a woman's Dalmatian got off her chain and jumped on him and bit him and killed him. You know, punctured his lungs. By the time I got him to the animal hospital, he was dead. So having a little dog, I've always feared a little dog getting bitten. So naturally, I always protect him if he's out in the street, if I tell someone walking him, don't let anyone with a big dog near him. I don't care whether she says, oh, he's friendly, don't worry, he's friendly. So naturally, when you expect something like that from outside, you can defend against it. But it didn't happen from outside. It happened, unfortunately, at the place where he is watched by a lovely person who's heartbroken over this. Her dog is getting, I guess, old and a little senile. And she dropped food on the floor, and bingo, the next thing you know, Teddy was bit right through. The canine went right through his foot. So, the beautiful part about this is that he's running around the house on 3 feet. He's on antibiotics and with, you know, draining the wound, and we're doing this, we're doing that. He went to the vet. But the interesting thing is they somehow don't even know they're injured. They keep going on. I mean, the nobility of the dog is just a beautiful thing to watch. How many times have you seen a crippled dog on 3 legs and you wonder how they do it? My dog's running up and down steps on 3 legs. Admittedly, he's sleeping a lot. So that's why I decided to give you something very cheerful today. One is Teddy was bitten on the right leg. And my other story is my friend is dying of cancer and nobody was in the hospital but one relative. So we can go from bad to worse, if you'd like. I can tell you what Obama's doing to America, which is literally killing it. When I get up and I read the news that the most vile organization in the history of the world, Media Matters, is now directly advising the White House. And when I realize that this fake nonprofit, Media Matters, is enjoying tax-free status, when in fact their nonprofit status should have been revoked years ago, but they're protected by the wonderful, superb, honorable men in the Obama administration, and now they're creating the essence of a super PAC for Obama. They're doing exactly what Jack Abramoff did. Jack Abramoff went to jail for this, and they're getting away with it because the White House and George Soros want them to get away with it. We are no longer living in a nation of laws. We're living in a nation of outlaws. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What do you want me to do? Talk about Whitney Houston? I didn't even know who she was. All day long, Whitney Houston, like the Pope died. I never saw anything like it. I mean, TMZ is reporting she OD'd on drugs and alcohol, and I'm supposed to listen to this rubbish. Now they're showing the last meal of Whitney Houston. Like I care. TMZ reports that Houston ordered a hamburger, fries, and jalapenos. I guess that's the diet that would be approved of by the White House. I mean, she should have stuck to carrot sticks. Why is this a news story to the level that it is? Who is she? She sang? And she died of a drug overdose, an alcohol overdose, according to the TMZ. And that's supposed to obsess me. Let me ask you something. I told you I went to visit my friend in the hospital who was going in for cancer surgery, right? Do you do this anymore? Does anyone do this anymore? Or does it make you uncomfortable? Has your therapist told you to avoid difficult and sad situations because it may affect your self-esteem? Is that what we've come to as a society? You don't like the tubes in the hospital? You like going there and seeing a friend who's sick? Is that it? You're not allowed to go because your shrink told you that it's bad for your mind? Well, let me tell you something. The whole world would be a better place if you did visit the sick and dying. That's all I can tell you. Eugene in Sacramento, what do you think? Is it a good idea or bad?
Oh, hey, you have to go take care of these people. Our cousin, nun in retirement, she died on the 23rd of December, and she was 91. But, you know, when she got pneumonia, we definitely went and, you know, made sure somebody was there. You know, most
in my religion, it's actually considered a requirement to visit the sick. In if I don't even walk around looking for sick people, like, you know, visit sick friends and family in a hospital or in their bed. You're supposed to visit them. Does anyone go to a funeral anymore? Or that is also a threat to the self-esteem and the partying. I mean, and the band played on, what, you're supposed to go to a party instead? Do you know that while Whitney Houston was dead, they were having a party four floors below? So they wouldn't even stop the party. These degenerate musicians would not even stop partying. I mean, let's face it, who are musicians? So they have some talent, and now they're role models because they can play an instrument or sing like a parrot? They wouldn't even stop the partying. Unbelievable to me. So my headline was Dirtbag Celebs Party While OD'd Singer's Body Turned Cold Upstairs. I mean, admittedly, it's cold what I wrote, but does that tell the truth? Here are some other headlines from my website because they're worth talking about. Top right, MichaelSavage.com. On the dole, one-fifth of all Americans. Some 67 million of you rely on federal aid, and it's growing. Number two, Hussein Obama wants $800 billion for Arab Islamists. You heard me. You heard me. He wants $800 billion. That's almost $1 trillion to help so-called Arab Spring countries. How about topic number three? The degenerate, sick, anti-American, the worst vermin on the planet, in my opinion, Media Matters head, coordinates with the White House. Virtually all of the mainstream media has used the work of this vile, disgusting left-wing group. Shall I go on? Dirtbag celebs party while OD'd singer's body turned cold upstairs. Leprechaun O'Reilly tricks conservatives again, defends Ellen DeGeneres against the women who oppose the sponsorship. Bill, your nose is getting longer, like Pinocchio's. Alan West, driven out of congressional district, not by Democrats, but by America-hating Republicans. That is right. Alan West was driven out of his own congressional district. They gerrymandered his district to make sure he wouldn't get elected again because they hate conservatives in the Republican Party. Shall I go on? Muslims reconquering Spain by mass immigration. Some cities in Spain now look more like the Middle East. Shall I go on? Or read it yourself. Greece agrees to fire uncivil servants and reduce welfare, and the city went afire. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What else is on the website? The federal government, which will not attack crack houses out of fear. The federal government, which permits drug gangs to run across the border with virtual impunity. The same federal government had the guts to shut down an Amish farm because they were selling fresh milk. The world has turned upside down under this administration. The global battle has been lost at this time. We are living in an age of insanity, an age of criminality. This upside down world that we're living in is a result of one man and one administration. And right now, the entire world is upside down because of them. There is no limit to their greed and their power madness. No limit to it. New York City, WOR. Jeff, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, love your show. Please do me a favor. Don't talk about politics. I'd rather listen to you talk about life. You know, you talking about your friend who was in a hospital struck a nerve with me because I read a story about something that happened in my town, and I actually cried, and I'm like 6'2", 225, whatever. This guy was in his house. He died in his late 80s. And nobody knew it for a year, almost 2 years, a year and a half. The mail piled up. The stupid post office never even.
That's
said,
hey. Well, of course, that's the world we live in. See, the thing is, there's a bigger story here. You visit a friend, but this was not an ordinary man. I mean, this guy has given all of his life to numerous people through his writings and through his profession. There was nobody there but the son and a secretary. There was nobody there.
Crazy.
That's the thing I'm mentioning. What I'm saying to you is what? We live alone and we die alone? Is that the whole story of life?
I hope not.
Is that the story of life? We're born alone and we die alone? Well, I guess that is the story. But, you know, there's a bigger meaning to a story like this, in a way. and it's one that children should listen to. There's a lot of attacks on the traditional family because of the vermin in the media and the degenerates who have taken over all of the avenues of thinking, from the films to the movies to the books by and large. They've tried to attack the brick of civilization, which is the family, and they've succeeded, by the way. They've had your son and daughter believe that marriage is sort of old-fashioned and there's no reason for it. This, of course, followed on the heels of an attack upon religion itself, where reason and truth and decency, frankly, has been replaced with prejudice and ideology. And so we're now living with the results of this inquisition that has been foisted upon us, with the first post-reasoning president in history in the White House. I almost could say the first post-Christian president, but then I would be attacked because he claims he's a Christian, but it's not about his religion. It's about his mentality and his activities. And so I stick to what the words I just said. Obama does not reflect Christian values. Obama does not reflect Western values. Obama reflects something entirely different, and I can write a whole book on it, which I've done in some part with Trickle Down Tyranny, which will be out in 2 months. But I want to go back to this whole thing about the dog and the hospital and things of that nature. Because there's been a wholesale attack upon the family and marriage, people don't even understand what awaits them in life. One of the reasons people got married in the past and had a family was so that in times of need, in times of sickness, the family would be around them. The family would be with them in their times of need. How many people have anyone around them in their times of need anymore? Where do the people come from? How are they supposed to find any support from a community when there is no community in America? Now, having said that, there are strong communities surrounding churches and things of that nature. And people do take care of their own in these communities. Also, in the deviant communities, there are very strong community ties amongst deviants. I've seen that as well. I have to qualify what I'm saying. They seem to take care of their own as well. The junkies certainly take care of the junkies in the media. Is that right?
Savage.
Morbid talking about, you know, the dog being bitten and my friend having cancer surgery. You know, it affected me because I don't generally go to hospitals. I avoid them. I'm very uneasy in hospitals, as most people are. Who wants to be there? Nobody, to begin with. I mean, it's not a happy place. There's always the fear of contagion when you walk in a hospital, right? I mean, everyone has that. Your intuition says, you know, you're being exposed in the elevator. It's like, yuck, you don't want to touch anything. And then you go in the room. Now, you know, so what did I do when I went in his room, my friend's room? Well, as I said, there was only the son and the secretary, nobody else. And, you know, people are chatting amicably to try to keep the person cheerful. I couldn't do it for more than 2 or 3 minutes. I sat there grimly. I had brought a prayer book with me. And I said, look, I don't really have much to say, so I'm going to read you a prayer. And I said to him, he's not a religious man at all. He's Jewish, but not religious. I said, do you know any Hebrew? And he said, no. I said, did you ever have any Hebrew lessons? He said, no. I did something very odd. I held up the front page of this prayer book, and I had him look at the Hebrew alphabet. And I said to him, sometimes I dream in languages I've never studied. He said, what? I said, you know that there have been cases on record of people who have been hit on the head, and they can suddenly start talking in a strange language. He said, yes, I know. I said, so I dream sometimes in languages that I don't even speak. I don't know how I do it, but I do. I know, let that go for the moment. So I said, just stare at this for 1 minute. Just glance at the entire alphabet. I said, good, now you understand the language. And I started to read him a prayer from the ancient texts. And in the middle of the happy chatter, he grabbed my hand and started to cry. I don't mean screaming like a baby, but he started to weep. And it had the effect I wanted to have, which is to reach him in his heart. I wanted his heart to be invigorated and brought back to life by thinking about, I don't know, whatever it was. And he grabbed me, and he wouldn't let go, obviously. He was holding on to me as though he was holding on to a life preserver. And I let my strength flow into his hand. I mean, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. Isn't that what you go to a hospital for, is to give the sick your strength? Isn't that what you're there for? I mean, that's the object of gifts and things, is to make them feel better. But what really makes a person who's sitting there like that facing so many horrors feel better? But the feeling that there's something eternal. And I said to him, just remember, you're eternal. Your body is a shell. Your body may be worn out, but your soul is going to live forever. Now, these words sounded so strange coming out of my mouth in a way, because they're not spoken anymore. And yet, it's the ancient of all, it's the most ancient of all wisdoms. And what value do such words have in a world of secular madness, in a world of insane superstition, in a world of such hatred for God, in a world of such disdain for morality, in a world where this derangement of ours that we have, the social derangement, a world turned upside down where everything is deranged, where a singer no one remembers really dies allegedly from the news of a drug overdose and alcohol, suddenly she's turned into a saint, and the whole world's supposed to go into mourning. It's astonishing to me. So that's what I did. And then one other line, I mean, just, you know, sharing, he says to me, I really missed our friendship, because I said we hadn't stayed close. I knew him very well many years ago, and then we stayed, distant. So he said, I really have missed our friendship. I said, there's nothing missed. I said, there is no time. Do you understand there's no time? I said, there is no time. I said, the last time I saw you could have been years ago, 10 years ago, and now it's one continuum. It's one moment. Do you understand that? And he always said to me, I've always known you're a philosopher. So what can I say to you? I left soon thereafter, and I immediately went to Joe's bar as fast as I could and sat alone in a restaurant. And I, you know, you want to hear something funny? I thought of driving across town to one of my favorite Italian haunts. I didn't want to see people at all. You know where I went? I went to a little hole-in-the-wall Chinese restaurant that I know, and all I did was drink beer and eat some really good food alone in a corner, and I felt good. I must tell you, I felt very good being alone. I didn't really want to be with anybody, nor did I really think it was appropriate. I don't even know why I'm telling you this. I just, the mood hit me because, you know what it is? Look, let's face it. You see your own mortality when you see a friend who's dying, right, or sick. Now, may he get well and live another 20 years or whatever. Who knows? As I speak to you, I don't even know the outcome. But inevitably, that's the way of all flesh. And no matter what you think you're doing to beat the Undertaker, no matter how you think you're going to beat it all, what does it come down to? We're made of flesh and bone, right? We all know that. And I think all of our life in the West is about avoiding the fact that we are made of flesh and bone. I sometimes think about the entire edifice of Western civilization is about denying the fact that we're part of the zoological order. Somehow, all of the entertainment media, all of it, seems to be constructed around the notion that we have somehow transcended the zoological order and that we are with angels all the time. We are not going to get sick. We're not going to die. There is no such thing as the end of our life. This is what all of entertainment seems to be about. Even though so much of the entertainment is about death and dying, it doesn't seem to ever reflect upon the fact that it applies to we the viewer. It's someone else. It's someone in the TV screen. It's an actor, it's a horse, it's a dog. The car wreck's not our car wreck. The motorcycle accident's not our motorcycle accident. You know what I'm saying? So there's no further truth to what I'm saying to you other than what I'm saying to you. And I don't. What am I here to advise you what to do? I'm asking some questions more than I'm answering anything, and that's why I'm saying to you, I'm not really in a great mood, and I don't really want to talk about the communist in the White House anymore. Not today. This man has destroyed the world. A single man in a single left-wing academic administration with money from George Soros, so far as I could tell, has set the world on fire. From one country to the other, the world is on fire. Their greed and stupidity is something never before seen in modern times. And the reason they get away with it is because they own the media. By and large, they own the media. And the one outlet on television that they don't own, Fox News, they're attacking in the courts in England and soon in the courts here. They have neutralized all opposition with hardly any knowledge from the so-called press here in this country, because they own the press. If not emotionally, if not ideologically, then outright, they outright own it. if you take a look at what George Soros has funded. Anyway, I think it's enough on this, and I'll take some good calls on this in a moment. Let's go to the callers around the country. Andrea, Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that you're America's life preserver, and you're the Savage Nation's life preserver. You seem to know what we want to talk about, and you keep us all going. And you've
well, I mean, isn't this a little too maudlin and sad, talking about going to a hospital to see a friend who's having cancer surgery?
No, no, it's part of life. It's reality. And I think most of us can't stand hearing any more Romney, Santorum, Gingrich.
No, well, that's how I feel. I mean, I had to take time out from the insanity of this endless Republican suicide dance to end it. I can't take another day of it. They're committing Harry Caray on purpose. They want Obama reelected so they can continue to act like they're the outsiders again. And to me, it looks like the fixing of the 1919 World Series or whatever it was. But, you know, Andrea and everyone else listening to the show, first, I want to thank you for continuing to listen today. I was at a loss this morning as to what to talk about. I wasn't going to go on the air because I do get into these moods once in a while. And usually if I get really too black, I don't even go on the radio at all. If I go into a very deep state of depression, which is really quite seldom, frankly. And then I come out of it on my own. I have my ways of coming out of things. I just do what I have to do through bicycling, vitamin C, whatever. And eventually I recover from it without medication, okay? It takes me a day. But then I said, wait a minute, there has to be a value to talking about real life 101. Hospital, dog being bitten, sense of mortality, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I had really bad dreams the night after that. You want to hear it? Would you like to hear a nice dream after the hospital visit, 3 in the morning? I'll give it to you anyway. I dream that I'm driving in an area north of San Francisco in a county called Sonoma County. Beautiful rolling, rolling hills wine country. I never go there. I don't like the wine country myself. I just don't go near it. Whatever. I don't have an affinity for it. I'm a boating person. I like the water. Some love vineyards. I don't love vineyards. They're beautiful to look at, but it's not my cup of tea, so to speak. Anyway, in this dream, I'm driving through Sonoma, and I pass a Christian burial ground, but there's almost no one buried there. There were just two or three graves near the side of the road with two crosses, and I remember that I had helped dig those graves at someone's funeral. I don't know who or what. And there was a sense of complete and total peace after that dream, within the dream. I don't know what the subconscious means, but it's another world. You know what I'm saying? Anyhow, here we are, 1-800-449-8255. Teddy's not even in the studio. Where is he right now? He's on the top of the stairs. I'm in one of my home studios right now. He's up there. He's favoring the punctured leg, you know, hopping around like on the three legs. And that's it. It's just one of those days, you know. We'll get through this thing together. But, you know, you've got your own life to worry about, your own bird. You probably don't want to hear some cranky talk show host talking about a friend in the hospital or a dog whose leg was bitten. So I'll be right back.
Savage.
Crazy news out there, too. Justice Breyer of the Supreme Court robbed by machete-wielding intruder in West Indies vacation home. Glad he wasn't hurt. What's the story about? They didn't even catch the guy? At least he didn't get beaten up by rough trade like Souter did. You know, walking in Marcy Park at night. I mean, that was thank God for small favors. In 1996, a man snatched Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's purse. While she was out walking with her husband and daughter near the home of Washington, Ginsburg was not hurt. A group of young men assaulted Justice Souter. Yeah, now they've changed it as he jogged on the street of Washington. That's not the report from 04. It wasn't a group of young men assaulting him. They changed that story already, revisionist history. A little 4 in the morning in a park. I don't think he was out on a jog at 4 in the morning, that one. But everything is a lie. I mean, the whole news business is like one lie after another. When Soros can buy so-called journalists, the way some people buy prostitutes. It's like a brothel to him. The media in America is like a brothel to George Soros. 1-800-449-8255. The guys are telling me, because a woman's calling me with a crazy question. I'm afraid to take this one, but I may as well take it. Stephanie in Hawaii, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you. You know, I just was thinking about what you said about your friend in the hospital and how we're faced to, you know, we're forced to face our own mortality. And I had to chuckle because I was thinking about what you said about lasagna in your feeding tube.
That's what I'm asking you. They said to me, I joked about that. When did you hear that?
Oh, I heard it was I listen to you every day. I love you. But it was like one of the commercials. Like,
that's what they said, because they said you were calling to ask, what were you going to ask? Something about when I die, is there going to be a memorial service? Is that a weird question for me? But is that what you were asking?
Well,
first of all, I'm not planning on dying. I don't have one foot in the grave yet. That's number one. But number two, it's a weird consideration, but I think everyone thinks about that. Especially people in the public eye, they start thinking, you know, what they're going to do, this and that. And I'm no different, but I'm trying to push it off out of my head. But it was funny. I mentioned it to the guys during the break because of your call. And they said, don't you remember you talked about what you're going to put in your feeding tube in the hospital in your last days, and it was going to be liquefied lasagna? I said, I didn't do that. They said that I did. They were going to find it for me.
Yes, it was lasagna on Monday and chicken teriyaki on another day. And...
Oh, I don't remember that. Doug has to find that for me. As for your question, I don't have an answer to that, Stephanie. I don't really have an answer to that. Something tells me it'll be a long time from now, according to the people who've read my palm over the years and according to other augurs. Who knows? Do we really know, Stephanie? I haven't really given it any distinct thought. You know, it is such a horrible topic. And yet I'm attracted to it because I'm drawn to it for a couple of reasons. When my father came over to this country as an immigrant from Russia, the first thing he bought was a burial plot. That's right. As poor as they were, all immigrants bought a burial plot immediately. When I lived in Hawaii, when I was a very young graduate student, what shocked me was the young Japanese couples would get engaged in their 20s, and they knew where they'd be buried when they died in their 70s, and we or 80s, whatever. We were shocked by that a young couple would have a burial plot. We couldn't understand it. But the older that I get, the more I realize the inherent wisdom in such acceptance. That's what I'm trying to say to you, is that, sure, my father came to a new country, but even as a young guy, he knew that eventually he'd need such a thing. He didn't leave it to the last day for his family to start scurrying around of what to do with the remains. You know what I'm saying? It's the same with the Japanese people. They had their lives pretty well planned out in Hawaii at that time. But I don't know that anyone does this anymore. In an age where God has been killed by the vermin in the media and by the other degenerate forces of the Antichrist, it's very hard to understand how people face these questions anymore. The loss of God, the loss of religion, has meant that reason and truth and beauty has been replaced by prejudice and confusion. And that's why we're living in this derangement that we're living in, where drugs are out of control, truth is no longer seen as a salvation, right is wrong, wrong is right, victim and aggressor are the same, cop and criminal are seen to be equal. Soldier and terrorist are made to be equal by the vermin and the Associated Propagandist Organization, AP. There's virtually nowhere to turn to get a sense of right side and up and down. No more. There's no northeast, west, and south. It's a derangement created specifically to leave you in the lurch, by the way. So here we are. I'm not going to talk about this in the next hour. I mean, there's enough already. You know, the next thing I'll know is there'll be a mass, you know, like a James Jones. Like Jones out there, Jim Jones. If I keep this up, there'll be like a mass suicide tomorrow, God forbid. I got to be very, very careful. I have no Jello to offer you or anything. Like, we're not selling any Savage Jello in it. God, that's not what I'm into. I mean, but so you want me to talk about Whitney Houston's last moments? Is that an important story? Police say she was found in a hotel bathtub, yet her family's saying that they don't know why she died. Okay, TMZ is reporting literally on the pills. On the table with the French fries and the burger. The celebrities were partying four floors down. They were partying. Nothing. I mean, why should you stop a good rave when you're stoned? What's the difference if someone died upstairs? 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. You want to talk about Israel and Iran? You want to talk about real murder? Huh? Israel accuses Iran of bombings targeting diplomats. Well, they're at war. It's not even a proxy war. It is a war. The only problem is Israel's sitting and shaking in its boots, waiting for Tel Aviv to go up in smoke, which I don't understand. I don't understand. They need a man with guts like Golda Meir to save the country. Israel needs a man with real guts wearing a skirt like Golda Meir to save them before they become incinerated like in the Holocaust. Because as sure as I'm standing here, the day Iran gets the capacity to fire a nuclear weapon at Israel, they will do so. They live in another universe. They're not reasonable. They're insane. The leadership of Iran live in another dimension where they believe in order to bring about the 12 Mahdi or whatever they're talking about, there has to be an apocalypse. There must be an apocalypse. So this psychotic, surrounded by the 15th century mullahs or the 9th century mullahs, will get the bomb and they will use it on Israel. And then what we're going to hear, they're going to go to the UN and cry to everybody? They need a real man like Golda Meir in Israel to save them, because right now I don't think they can save themselves. And it's certainly not our job to save them. They have been given a military. They've been given billions of dollars every year for years, for 50 years now. It's like Israel's like a dependent child. How much can we give a country that refuses to defend itself? And so therefore, unless Israel defends itself, they're going to become like our Cuba, like the Soviet Union to Cuba. That's what's going to happen very soon. You can't blame Obama for that at a certain point. How much can you support a country militarily and financially that will not defend itself? And frankly, as one who supports Israel from top to bottom, given their neighbors and who the neighbors are, I'd like to see something already on the order of a little military action to defend themselves. I don't want to hear about it anymore. I don't want to hear about the boy who cried wolf.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Back to the Savage Nation. I'm sort of going through Churchill's Black Dog days on the Savage Nation, but I'm in good company. The fact of the matter is I go in and out of these things and have all my life, and I don't use medication because I don't need it. What I do is I write my way out of it, I talk my way out of it, and I'm one of those men. That's so you live with it. That's life. But the thing is, I was thinking about this. I visited my friend in the hospital in the cancer ward, and then my dog got bitten. Then the musician dies. I was thinking about the musician's four food groups. And I don't think it's limited to any one particular person, but I think the musician does follow the four food groups when it comes to ingestion. And the four food groups of the musician would be one from the opioids, one from the cannabinoids, one from the alcohols, and then one from the deep fryer. That would be the four food groups for the American musician. Would you say I'm wrong on that? They eat a very balanced diet. Oh, yeah, they take one from the opioids, one from the cannabinoids, one from the alcohols, and one from the deep fryer. And they wonder why they go down the tubes when they get depressed. Now, jokingly, in the last hour, I got a little down thinking about these things. And Beowulf and Doug and Charles reminded me that I did do a joking piece on this a few years ago where I mused on what my, well, listen to it. I have filled out a living will, finally, something I never wanted to face. I've avoided all my life. My living will now states that should I ever find myself on a feeding tube, it will be alternated with Chinese and Italian food. Calamari day will be Monday. Tuesday will be shrimp and lobster sauce. Wednesdays will be liquefied lasagna. I'm actually planning a menu, a seven-day menu for my feeding tube. That's funny. I don't even remember doing it. I swear to God, when you do a show for 16 years, 3 hours a day, you know, with rare exception, you don't know what you can't remember every show you do. It's amazing what comes out of the human being over the years. So, yeah. Hey, I want to ask you something. I was going to go to Florida this week, but I canceled it because the dog got, you know, the bite. But I may go next week. I was sitting in one of my favorite Italian restaurants last week and feeling comfortable. You know, when you're home, you have a place like in your hometown, you go to places, whether it's a coffee shop or whatever, and you have a sense of home. And you can't repeat that somehow, no matter how good the restaurant might be somewhere else. I'm asking a question now for a listener. In South Florida, in the Boca Raton, Delray, Palm Beach corridor along Federal Highway, where all the witness protection Italian restaurants are located, I think the federal government has more restaurants on that on that highway than anywhere else in America, I think cluster-wise. It's in every mall it's blacked out. There's a booming Italian restaurant. I don't know how that works. I'm just joking. So if you are a restaurant owner in the Federal Highway corridor or in that area, and you would like, and you're listening to the Savage Nation, would you call us at 1-800-449-8255? Maybe I'll make your restaurant my home. I need a place to hang out. I mean, I go to places down there, and the food is, you know, whatever, what, not bad. But it just doesn't feel like home to me. It's one of the reasons I don't like to travel. What's the point of it? Okay, let's go to the callers. There are topics galore. Don't you worry about it. There's plenty of old politics to talk about. Where shall I begin? Well, you go to my website and do it yourself. You can do your own homework. The point is you can call any of the topics I've already read to you. If you want to comment on my observation that the musicians' four food groups consists of one from the opioids, one from the cannabinoids, one from the alcohols, and one from the deep fryer, you're welcome to call us as well. No, not one. Not one caller on any of these things. So maybe we'll clear the board up and we'll go on. We got the callers on that the last hour. You want me to talk about Churchill's black dog? It's an interesting topic. What is Churchill? What do we mean by black dog? It was his name for his depression. And the nickname means it happens and that this dog called depression sinks his fangs into you every now and again. But the thing to remember is that it's only a dog, and sometimes you can remove the dog's fangs from you or just lock it away from you. But he wasn't the only famous man who had the black dogs. Goethe, Schumann, Luther, Tolstoy, many, many others, great men who suffered from recurrent depression. And how they dealt with it, obviously, is a product of their art, meaning the productions that these individuals left the world were a reaction to depression. I don't know if you know it. But good psychiatrists in my day used to say that young people who were depressed, that artists produce in spite of, not because of, depression. You see, now this was the rub. A lot of people started to think that depression produced the art, and they would induce themselves into a depression with drugs or alcohol in order to get really bad and feel bad. They thought that art came out of it, but usually garbage came out of it. And Huxley wrote that people created in spite of their depression, not because of it. And that can really turn your life around once you come to understand that. Instead of seeking to make yourself mad, what you do is you ignore your madnesses and you work around it in spite of it. You understand what I'm saying to you? It's a very important concept that has been lost in the age of pharmacology where they throw pills at everything. Right or wrong? Am I right about that? So far, no. No callers from Italian restaurants. I'm not going to travel then. Okay. There's no Chinese food in Florida. That's the shocker. You know, I live in an area where there's great Chinese food in San Francisco. Honest to God, I went down there. I mean, I had a shrimp and lobster. So I told you, you couldn't get it off the table. A drop of it spilled. It was like super glue. If you put a fork into the dish, it stood straight up. I was so afraid of the guy behind the counter, the guy with a cleaver. I told you I'd gone in there before. I thought it was new ownership. The same mad guy was there. Maybe he's an underground guy for the People's Liberation Army or something. This guy looks like he walked over the Himalayas into Europe on his own. So I didn't want to send this one back. I mean, I figured, all right, enough is enough. I just took it. Hey, may I have that one to go? I have some bricks at home that need to be mortared. Yeah, I have a trowel at home. I'll use your shrimp and lobster sauce to reestablish my wall going down to the... Unbelievable. So they're still calling now at nursing homes, hospitals. I don't know if we want to do that one. Should I just do news? We want to do news on the Savage Nation. Am I ready to do news? What is today's date? Got the calendar out. Got the useful calendar. Like, I have calendars in every room now, like a madman. Every room I have calendars with notes on it, going back like 20 years. Okay, meeting the... Oh, all my train calendars. I always have to have the Orchard Supply Hardware train calendar. I love looking at, like, the nostalgia. Meeting the future. A Texas and Pacific and Cotton Belt steam engines. Ask Texas and Pacific and Cotton Belt steam engines. Wait impatiently. A southbound Cotton Belt passenger train with a brand new diesel. Pauses at the joint TNP St. Louis at Big Sandy, Texas in 1950. As diesel locomotion multiplied, the steam engines would soon become history. Remember I told you when I went out to visit my relatives in Pennsylvania, we had diesels in New York, and then when they got to New Jersey, they were still allowed to use a steam engine. Could you believe it? They still had steam engines? I remember the entire trip out to Pennsylvania was, you looked out of the window, it was like black soot flying by. It was like living in India. I lived in like a Sajat Reet movie. My entire childhood was the American equivalent of Sajat Reet. No one even knows who he is anymore. Now, the only thing people know about India are call, you know, like call screening, you know, and taking you like a Chinese takeout order. I call the local Chinese restaurant. It's crazy. There's a chain restaurant here in San Francisco in the Bay Area. When I don't want to, you know, I call them up. The call center in India is taking Chinese food orders. I'm not making this up. How does this go? How do you place an order for a certain dish with a guy in India when the restaurant is four blocks from your home? How in the world can you function in a world like this? The answer is you go to Safeway and buy steak and cook it, you know, at night with French fries, which was what I did last. Whenever there's like a problem, like a dog gets bitten or a friend has died, what you do is you throw away all of your dietary knowledge. So I bought two steaks, pan fried them with French fries. Man, was it a good meal. I got to tell you. Drank four beers, felt good, watched too much. Oh, I saw the worst television show of my life again. It's so bad that I dreamed that I talked to Dustin Hoffman. I don't understand how this man could walk around Los Angeles after this series called, what's it called, Luck? I've never seen anything like it. It gets worse. I thought it was going to improve like Boardwalk Empire did. Remember I told you that I didn't like Buscemi and Boardwalk Empire, then I came to like it, right? You said to me when I first bashed Luck, the HBO series, that I'd like it. It's gotten worse. I've never seen anything like it. It gets worse each week. And more preposterous each week is the Dustin Hoffman character who waddles. How can you take this man seriously as a gangster who spent 3 years in the can? The guy waddles. He looks like the kind of guy that nobody in the world, a toddler wouldn't be afraid of him. He doesn't walk. He toddles. What's even more impressive is that in every scene, Dustin Hoffman is seen with his head reared back. Whether he's sitting in his car being driven around by his loyal henchmen or walking into a bank to talk to his board of directors, there's little Dusty with the head reared back and you're supposed to be intimidated by him. The last scene was beyond belief. I swear to you, I don't know who's producing these HBO things. The last scene was the Dustin Hoffman character, Ace, talking to this other guy whose name I forget, Dennis Farina, who's apparently his henchman, who lives in the same apartment in an attached room. They look like Lekaj Ophal again. As they're talking about a crime or a business deal they're planning, they both nod off in their pajamas and bathrobes. I'm not making this up. How does this get produced in Hollywood? How do they do this in Hollywood? You heard me right. Hollywood is hollower than ever. I shall return.
Savage.
From the vine came the grape, from the grape came the wine. From the wine came a dream to a lover.
Sounds like my relative singing it at a wedding. It's awful. But wait, stop. I wanted the Dean Martin version. Just to cheer the audience up. I think I brought him into a depression myself. I was reading this thing on Churchill's Black Dog. I have to go on with it in a minute. I will. This whole thing about depression is very, very interesting. Because Black Dog was Churchill's name for his depression. And it tells you an awful lot about it, right? Now, the essayist writes about depression amongst the extraordinary people. Not the ordinary person who usually goes for the doctor version or the therapy version. And the essayist says that a depressive nature, people with depressive natures, feel unloved. And in Churchill's case, he was unloved. His parents neglected him. They were not interested in him. And the essayist says that in Churchill's journey to being a great leader, He said, if I can't be loved, I'll find a way to be admired. And then the essayist says, another name for this decision is ambition. You see? Ambition of such proportions that it becomes greatness. It's an amazing essay. And luckily, he used this to the betterment of the world. He triumphed over Hitler, of course, with the help of America. Nevertheless, he was a great leader, no question about it. It says, in that time, what England needed was not a shrewd, equable, balanced leader. She needed a prophet, a heroic visionary, a man who could dream dreams of victory when all seemed lost. Winston Churchill was such a man. What's interesting to me is that Barack Hussein Obama is such a mean-spirited person that the first act, one of his first acts when he was put into the White House, was to remove the bust of one of the greatest men in the history of Western civilization, Winston Churchill. I'm surprised he hasn't put up a bust of Lenin yet. Palm Beach, Florida. Stephanie, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, how are you?
What's up?
Well, you called, you asked about Italian restaurants in the Palm Beach area.
Yes.
And, yeah, my family has one in Palm Beach. It's called Cucina del Arte.
Where is it?
It's on Royal Poinciana Way.
Is it on West Palm or in Palm?
Actually, it's in Palm Beach. It's at the North Bridge coming into town.
Is it near Mar-a-Lago in the same area?
It's a little bit further north. It's north of 4th Avenue.
And what kind of cuisine do you specialize in?
Well, it's Italian, and it's mostly a lot of it's more northern Italian, and the menu changes constantly.
I'm going to have to, you know, I have a house, but it's not in the Palm Beach area. It's near there, but I really appreciate it. But you shouldn't tell your listeners that you listen to me. The liberals may not go to your restaurant anymore.
Oh, that's okay. We listen to you every day. Are you kidding me?
Isn't that beautiful? No, that's very sweet. You know, I don't go back to a restaurant where they say to me, hey, Mike, you know, we really love your show, but we can't tell you that in front of anybody. I will never go back. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if they're not up front with the fact that they love America, why should I go in there again? Would I have to hide the fact that they love a man whose show says that they love America?
I totally agree with you.
Right, Stephanie? I mean, I'm proud of being an American. I'm an immigrant son, and I love this country, and I hate people who hate it. How's that?
I'm with you there.
Right? They can take their meatballs, and you know what they can do with them.
Exactly.
So, but, Stephanie, in your restaurant, you're upscale. You don't serve meatballs, right?
No.
Isn't it funny how the meatball is the dividing line in restaurants? That if an Italian restaurant wants to be upscale, they won't serve a meatball. There's nothing, I mean, what's wrong with a meatball, even in a fancy Italian restaurant? They're very hard to make, right, Stephanie? You know my old joke, right? That when America was great, the meatballs were large and fluffy and soft and warm. And as America became more and more socialistic and mean, the meatballs started to look like Swedish meatballs, small and tasteless.
True.
I agree. So I'm going to come down there. I'll make some meatballs and bring them in. Hey, guys, get Stephanie's address. I'm going to make a point to go in there if I can. Boca Raton. Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Yes.
I'm not the restaurant owner, but I'm the entertainer at this couple of restaurants down here in Boca Raton.
I love it. I love it. An Italian restaurant with entertainment. What do you play?
I do Sinatra and Dean Martin, all that good stuff.
Oh my God! So, like, how do you go? You perform at night, obviously, every night, or when?
Yeah, different places around here, but almost every night.
So, Tony, what would you recommend in that area for a place to sit and be relaxed, where you can, you know, kind of make it like your second home?
Well, the place just opened about 2 months ago. I'm there on Wednesday nights. It's called Frank and Dino's. It's a Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin theme, fantastic food, and you got the entertainment. I've got a wireless mic. I come around by the table.
I love it. You know, who's my friend in Vegas who's doing the performance this week? Robert Davi sings Sinatra. You know Robert Davi's work, right?
Oh, yeah. Sure, absolutely.
Well, he's performing in Vegas. I think it's this week, right, Beowulf? Hey, get Tony's address or phone number, or whatever. Next time I'm down there, I'll stop in for a meatball. Tony will bounce a few meatballs around.
Savage.
Keep Italian in your heart, let it always feel part
Nicopolo Forte from Broadway, Danny Rose, one of my favorite scenes in the history of movies. Forgot it for years. It was very funny, remember? Very, very funny. So here we are, the Grammys. I don't watch them. To me, it's just an industry thing like the others, you know. And she ODs on pills and alcohol and supposed to now have a national day of mourning. It's all right. Sad she's dead. Another person dies from a drug overdose and alcohol. And what? And what else? She's the Pope all of a sudden. But that's the entertainment business. They make themselves into the church. Now it's the Pope now. The church is dead, but the entertainment industry is alive. And then the lunatic, Tony Bennett, who apparently can't get one paragraph straight in his entire adult senior years. In all of his senior years, Tony Bennett can't link an entire paragraph that makes sense. He links Whitney Houston's death to illegal drugs when LAPD sources are telling Fox News that it was likely a mix of prescription pills and alcohol. It's amazing. Intimating it was dangerous street drugs and drugs should be legalized. You know, I mean, you know, whether they're nice people or not, they're just people. And most people in the arts are not to be listened to when it comes to any kind of policy decisions. It's that simple. What is he using this death to make an important point, which is whether or not drugs should be legalized? So you've got tremendous problems with drugs in this country. And right now, one of the biggest problems are so-called legal prescription drugs. We know that. It may actually outdo the so-called illegal street drugs. You got kids taking OxyContin and mashing it up and smoking it, for God's sakes. That's why I say the favorite, the four food groups for the average entertainer is one from the opioids, one from the cannabinoids, one from the alcohols, and one from the deep fryer. That's their four food groups. All right, let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Portland, Oregon, John's been holding. He wants to talk about the worst show ever created in the history of television called Bad Luck with Dustin Hoffman. Portland, Oregon, John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
What's up?
So I was listening to you the other day, and again, it came to my mind when you were talking about it today. I think I know what's going on with Dustin Hoffman and this Luck thing.
What back is it?
Back when Al Pacino did The Godfather, I think Dustin thought he could have gotten that role and should have had it. And so all along, Dustin Hoffman has had another disease. In addition to his liberalism, he is suffering from Pacino envy.
Very funny. Yeah, why does he play gangsters? He's the Pacino looked sinister when he wanted to, right?
Yeah, I mean, Al Pacino.
How could a guy with a Bartlett pear body who waddles and doesn't walk look menacing? How is that possible?
I he doesn't. To me, it's kind of like I haven't even seen the show. And
it's unbelievable. Every scene, he's got his head reared back like he's an important gangster walking around. Here comes Dustin Hoffman as Ace the Gangster. And he waddles into every room. It's shocking to believe that they... do they think the average American is that idiotic?
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. As I said to you, both the political world and the entertainment world consider the average American to be no more than a bacterium.
And so
they treat you as though you're a bacterium that needs an antibiotic in the form of homilies and lies that will cure you of your stupidity by making you even dumber. But I like your line about he has Pacino envy. It's very funny. Very good use of words. I appreciate that. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Boston, Massachusetts. WRKO. Michael, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mike, I'm sorry to hear about little Teddy.
Yeah.
Now that we're talking about little small things like Dustin Hoffman, we'll talk about little dog. My dad with three legs. This is 30 years ago. He was over the curb in front of the house. The truck hit him and tore his leg apart. We had no money back in the day. We had seven kids. So my father came home and they said, sorry, kids, we're going to put him down. Gee, we were all sick over that, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what? We'll get the money, and we had the leg amputated. You know, he lasted 16 years, Mike, up and down the sidewalks like a regular dog. He was a great dog, a right front leg.
But Michael, he lost a front leg or a rear?
A front leg.
And they hop on the other leg. I don't know how they do it.
It's amazing. You know why they do it, Mike? Because the little Teddy was so happy that after he got bit, that you were still there for him, and he wanted to show you that he was still Teddy, and he was, you know, it's like Ray Arcel, the great fight promoter, said one time, the great fight trainer said, they said to him, hey, Ray, how's your guy going to beat this guy? He's bigger than him. And Ray Arcel said to the guy, he said, hey, look, it's not the size of the dog. Teddy's got a heart. Like my little guy had a heart. He lived for 16 years with three legs.
Unbelievable. That's a beautiful call, Michael. Really a beautiful call. Well, that's good to know. No, his leg is good, unless it gets infected. But, I mean, we're watching it. You know, they put him on antibiotics. And the only thing is I don't like that it's a puncture wound because they have to be kept open and draining. You know that.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, he's 11 pounds. It's probably 10.5 pounds hot.
No, he does have a heck of a, you know, what these little guys are. They have, first of all, they have to be tougher even to get up in the morning and take a walk and not be afraid of the other dogs, right?
Exactly. No, you got a great little pup there, and he loves you, and you love him. Mike, one other thing. I had a dream, and you were in it. It was.
Oh, my God. No, I want to hear this. Please, you got to tell me. What was it?
I was listening to your show one time, and it was about the planes and, you know, phobias and flying and everything. And I remember as a boy, there was a terrible plane crash over New York City. And I knew you came from the Queens, the section of New York.
I do. I remember the crash. It went down in South Jamaica.
Yeah, and the thing about it, Mike, was you and I were talking. We were looking for two boys who were selling Christmas trees that were killed.
In that crash?
It was Michael Savage. I don't know what, I mean, I don't even know what you look like, but I was with Michael Savage. We were looking for two kids that were killed on the ground by these two big planes.
Oh, you're saying you had a dream in which you and we don't know each other, were searching for two boys who were killed in that plane crash.
Yeah, because you...
I'm gonna solve it for you right now. You want me to give you my dream interpretation?
Please, Mike, do.
You connect with me because I sound like somebody familiar to you, and you, in your dream, you thought you and I were searching for our own boyhood.
You know, that's probably a good interpretation.
You and I were looking for we were looking for ourselves when we were young. And I remind you in some ways of yourself when you were much younger. Am I right, Michael?
You're absolutely correct, Mike. Honest to God, that's perfectly...
Where did you grow up? In Boston?
Right outside of Boston. A city called Newton, Massachusetts.
I know the area somewhat. I had some relatives that came from the area. And have you had a life that you would say has been difficult?
I had a great life, Michael. I'm a grandfather. I got beautiful children. I have a beautiful wife. A combat veteran of Vietnam. I was a firefighter 31 years. I've had good health. I've had good dogs. You know, what else can you say, Mike? I've been a lucky guy.
That's interesting. See, there's a man. You know, there's a biblical phrase, and I don't know where it's from, where it says, who is the wealthy man? He who is satisfied with his lot. You're a very wealthy man, Michael.
I certainly am, Mike. And, you know, the good thing is I know it, and I can appreciate it, and thank God every day. You know, there's other things out there, but I sit in my room here, and I look at the pictures of my grandchildren. I read books. I listen to Michael Savage, and I'm whole. I'm home, Mike.
Wow, man, you're a friend of mine. You are a friend of mine. Can I send you a book of some kind just to make a contact with you? Guys, keep Michael on the line. Send him any one of the books that he would like that we have because it's a nice thing to do. What a beautiful call that was. 1-800-449. How about a little Dean Martin? Come on, play some happy music. If not, then I'll go, you know, we'll just do some current music. We could play some Barack Obama, who is doing everything he can to destroy everything that's good about America. Cantare. I love when he says cantare. You would think it's cantare because you're an American. You don't speak Italian the way they do. It's like calamari as opposed to calamari. It depends upon which side of the Tiber you're from.
We can sing in the glow of a star that I know of.
What a voice this guy had. And you talk about tragedy. You know, what this guy overcame in his life. You think he had everything, the barber, huh? The singing barber. The Sinatra, the girls, the white. Well, when his son was killed in a training crash, his son was training to be an Air Force pilot. When his son died, you talk about a depression. When I read what happened to this guy, but it didn't kill him. He got up. He got up and he sang again. That's all. That's what you do. You get back on your feet. As Freud said, the great, 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 great genius, Sigmund Freud, who has been demoted by the people who couldn't even shine this guy's shoes. Sigmund Freud wrote that if one day you wake up and you realize that you're crawling on one arm and one leg, you know what you do? He said, you crawl on one arm and one leg. You don't cry for the government to give you an artificial arm and an artificial leg, nor do you blame anybody for the missing arm and the missing leg. It's a funny statement because I don't know where it was last week. Now I remember I was in a mall somewhere, an outdoor mall I go to by bike. I don't talk to many people. Once in a while, I see a guy, young man, maybe in his 30s, nice-looking guy in a wheelchair, and his legs are gone, you know, under a blanket. And I'm always wanting to make contact with people who are out there, like in that situation. For whatever the reason may be, it's not so much morbid curiosity. It's more of a contact. So I usually will go up to somebody who's like that and ask them a question about the one thing you're not supposed to ask. So I go up to him, and he actually saw my dog last week, and he says, "Oh, what kind of dog is he?" He says, "Is he a poodle?" I said, "Yeah, he's beautiful," he said. I guess he liked the spunky little dog. So he's pushing himself around, and I said to him, "What happened to your legs?" He said, "Motorcycle accident." I said, "Oh," and I cursed. Like I cursed fate for him. He said, "No, it's okay. All is good. I'll be right back."
Savage.
All right, so here we are. The world's going crazy. One of the most erratic, dangerous groups in history, Media Matters, is now accessing not only the White House on a regular basis, but the mainstream media is picking up all of their insane views of the world and putting them into stories. So when I say the AP today is the Associated Propagandist, you think it's just in jest that I say it. No. Inside Media Matters, this story just came out. Sources, memos reveal erratic behavior, close coordination with White House and news organizations, from the Daily Caller. And you may not know who these people are, but they're very, very dangerous. The so-called liberal, nonprofit Media Matters for America, which has gone after Michael Savage and everyone else who loves this country. They're fundamentally left-wing personality assassins, and they live in total paranoia every day. According to this article, the lunatic who runs it fears snipers. He has more security than a third world dictator, according to one employee, explaining that this lunatic never leaves his bodyguard's sides, and he has bodyguards who stand post to protect him every night. Nobody can believe this, and this is the man inside the White House. And I'm talking about a group called Media Matters. It was founded by this lunatic named David Brock, and ever since then, he's been on a warpath against anyone who loves this country and loves family and church. And he's on very good first person basis with the leadership inside the White House. This group got one of the loud mouths fired from MSNBC in 2007. They also went after guys like what's his name? Well, Lou Dobbs was attacked by him. I was attacked by him. The other guy with the eyeglasses, the hemorrhoid guy. Glenn Beck was attacked by them. And so Media Matters is protected by nonprofit status. Media Matters receives tons of money from George Soros. They are not a nonprofit group by any imagination. Now, it gets worse than this. It turns out that they're boasting that not only is the despicable MSNBC using all of their lies, but mainstream media has the ears of MSNBC President Phil Griffin. I call him Phil Griffin out of affection. Phil Griffin is the same man who has overseen that despicable network for all of these years. They attack Fox News. They feed their stories to the Associated Propaganda Organization called AP, and they take it as though it's the truth. But worse yet, is Obama's senior advisor, Valerie Jarrett, is directly tied to this group, Media Matters. So what does it mean to you? What it means to you is that unless their tax-exempt status is investigated in a congressional or Senate hearing so the whole public can see how much money David Brock makes, how their nonprofit status is questionable, whether they should pay back taxes for all of the years they've actually been an arm of the Democrat slime machine, unless we get this congressional hearing of Media Matters, this thing is going to grow. And it's going to grow and grow and grow. And for those of you who don't care much about this, I'm going to drop the story. You can read more about it on michaelsavage.com. You can even see a picture of the prize personality, David Brock, the genius behind Media Matters, and you'll understand the face of the opposition. North Carolina Ross, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mike, what good is it going to do if Mitt Money wins or Rick Santorum if we don't crush the fifth column media? So that
well, now you're talking, and I like your use of pictorial imagery. Mitt Money and Rick, what'd you call it? Rick Santorum?
Santorum. That'll do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it works, and you're right. The fifth column is out of control. And the story I just told about David Brock and the Media Matters would probably hit home with you, right?
Oh, absolutely. Do you remember the Meccan candidate in July of 2008? He goes to Berlin. He gives a speech to 200,000 Germans. The speech basically was a bomb.
Yeah.
But where do you just see this is beyond chutzpah. This is why I've been calling him the Meccan candidate for 3 years. This goes way beyond chutzpah. Who goes to a foreign country as if he's the new Fuhrer leader, tells people he's going to win the election when he's 3 points behind Hillary, and that's beyond chutzpah. He's got to have people backing him up.
In other words, he knew something that the other people didn't know, that the fix was in like the 1919 World Series. Okay, having said that, did you read the story today that Obama wants $800 billion for the so-called Arab Spring countries?
I heard.
My headline is Hussein Obama wants $800 billion for Islamists in the Arab Crescent. Am I wrong?
You're absolutely right.
How people don't see who he is. The man is apparently day by day emerging as to who he truly is.
You were the first to say it. Liberalism is a mental disorder. And
can you explain to me how any Jew could vote for Obama? Let's start with the Jews. Let's start with a very small population group that continuously supports a man who has virtually put Israel on a suicide watch. How could the Jewish establishment continue to support this man and this party?
There's only one answer that I can come up with.
There.
There.
Explain this.
I have to be a Democrat. It's unbelievable.
How do they continue to vote for a party that wants to tax them out of existence? How is that possible?
And
how do they vote for a party that is anti-religion? How do they vote for a party that's anti-family? How do they do this? Now, take it from the Jewish population in America that's diehard 90% Democrat and go down the line of any other ethnic demographic and ask yourself the same question. So the answer is, if Obama gives them money, then you could see why they vote for him. So if you're a deadbeat welfare recipient, who are you going to vote for? You're going to vote for a man who gives you welfare, right? And go down the line. So 50% of Americans pay no federal income tax. You know who they're going to vote for, right? The man who would rob from those who make money to give it to them so they continue to take drugs and drink alcohol and do nothing for a living.
Do you know, I listened to a guy on radio last night. This will interest you. Here's a guy who's popular. He rants and raves against the Democrats every Sunday night. I won't mention his name. He tells us that he's going to have an 8-minute interview with Joe Biden. He threw 3 cupcakes at Biden.
You mean when he got him on the air? Well, now you understand how they get Biden to come on the show. They have the script in advance. Now you understand why I have almost no guests on the show. Because they're afraid of the truth. They're afraid of real questions. So I am so glad that there's men like you out there in the world, Ross, even if the country continues to slide downhill to the Islamists and the drug addicts and the degenerates, at least some of us will go down with a fight. That's all I can say. There's nothing else I can say.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
What is your prognosis of the American economy right now? It does seem to be doing better than the Eurozone, than Japan. How do you read it?
It definitely shows some signs of revival. Very important is the emergence of shale gas and shale oil as a cheap source of energy, which has made manufacturing more competitive. Also, the fact that you now had several years of no wage growth, so wage disparities have been reduced, and so all this is bringing a very welcome relief.
Well, here's all the news. You're not going to believe this, but Obama has put out a budget that is, well, it looks dead on arrival because even the Democrats can't vote for it. What is it? It's class warfare. It's tax the middle class. One layer upon another layer of tax hikes aimed at successful business owners, successful investors, and corporations. Capital gains goes from 15 to 24%. Dividends tax goes from 15 to 40%. That does not even include the double tax on corporate profits. The Bush well, I can go on. The fact of the matter is it's all aimed at those who produce. And not one item is aimed at the 50% of Americans who pay no federal income tax. The good news is that the Republicans will likely vote against it, although we don't know anymore what they'll do. And there's no entitlement reform. That's the bad news. Meaning, no cut in spending except in the military. This is a welfare state proposal of the lowest order. It's something you would expect from a tin pot dictator in Greece. Also, Hussein Obama wants $800 billion, that's almost $1 trillion. Do you know what for? For the Arab Islamists to help the Arab Spring. $800 billion to people who are fundamentally Islamists who hate America. This you're not going to believe. You know Media Matters? You know who they are? Media Matters are the people who smeared me with England. They're the people who got Glenn Beck off television. Media Matters has destroyed one conservative show after another. It's run by a psychotic drug addict who is checked into mental hospitals. They've been coordinating with the White House. They're funded by George Soros. You're not going to believe it, but virtually all the mainstream media has used the work of this left-wing psychotic. Now, they're entitled to do what they want. They're entitled to take the money from the most evil man on the planet, and they're entitled to work with Obama. However, they're a non-profit. If they're coordinating with the White House, they're violating the IRS laws. However, Obama is the IRS. Get it? That's how it works. In essence, they're doing exactly what was done by Jack Abramoff, only worse. He went to jail. They went to the White House. That's your man in the White House. Dirtbag celebs party while OD'd singer's body turned cold upstairs in the Beverly Hilton Hotel. I'm sick and tired of hearing about Whitney Houston this, Whitney Houston that. First of all, to be honest with you, she was a has-been. What is this incredible media obsession with her? But the bigger story is that the dirtbag celebrities at the so-called grannies, I call them grannies because most of them are over the hill, were partying while her body was turning cold upstairs. I love how they say they don't know why she died. Every report, including TMZ, is that she took a drug overdose and died in a bathtub. Speaking about deception and being underwater, the leprechaun Bill O'Reilly has tricked conservatives again, defending Ellen DeGeneres against the million conservative moms. Thank you, Bill, but your nose is growing longer than Pinocchio's. Muslims are reconquering Spain by mass immigration. All these stories are on michaelsavage.com, top left. My brand new book, Trickle Down Tyranny, will not be out until, well, April 3rd. But you better take a look at it right now and pre-order it, because you're going to want to get this book, Trickle Down Tyranny, because it's probably the most important book of the year, okay? Without any more hyperbole, I ask this. Will President Obama succeed in his plans to transform the greatest engine of freedom the world has ever seen into a top-down, heavy-handed, authoritarian regime, if not a dictatorship? Or will the American people succeed in exposing and ridding themselves of this new Leninist? It's very straightforward. Maybe too straightforward for you. On the bottom left of michaelsavage.com, Fed shut down Amish farm for selling fresh milk. Crack houses they leave open. Illegal aliens coming in from Mexico. But the FDA has attacked the Amish and won. That's your government at work. See a picture of the $500,000 Aston Martin. Millionaire teacher retires after a decade on probation. HBO TV drama, the worst ever made, Luck. Maybe the worst TV drama ever made in history. Has been attacked because they killed horses. They mistreated their horses, their star horses, who've been dying, and they hit it. So there it is. There's Dustin Hoffman for you.
Sit down.
I'm fine.
Sit down.
This move of yours.
They told you what I want to try.
Your horse idea. My big racetrack.
Morning, Pops.
I suppose we might as well run them, huh?
Hey, you come to my restaurant. Private game.
Okay, you're on.
We're gonna play poker.
I told you what I'm gonna do. You want a piece?
I do want a piece.
Not only can he lose all his money, we can get our throats cut.
Both hands on the wheel, Carol.
Big holdback for honest people. Very tough for him to take a yes.
What am I going to be doing to earn my keep?
You're going to meet somebody.
What else is on michaelsavage.com? Savage says the founders envisioned a petty dictator like Obama. Am I wrong? I don't think so. And finally, the Obama deal makes Warren Buffett $154 million richer. There's a great video that you should see on my website of a British parliamentarian, Douglas Murray, his finest speech delineating the inane moral fetter of the libs who ignore Iran and attack Israel. It's all on michaelsavage.com.
The politics will be a break on the recovery in this year. After the elections, if the Republicans win, actually, they'll undergo a miraculous transformation where they discover that actually it wouldn't be so bad. We can afford to have some stimulus.
So you think Mitt Romney, if elected, would pursue a stimulus program?
I think, I'm pretty sure that would happen. Of course, Obama would like to as well. He may find it more difficult if the Republicans continue to obstruct him.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com.
Savage.
Bankruptcy judge orders sale of Peter Madoff's $270,000 vintage Aston Martin. A vintage sports car that helped drive Bernard Madoff's victims to ruin will be put up for auction in August. A Manhattan bankruptcy judge ordered, let's see which it is. I know Aston Martin's fairly well. Piles of junk by and large. Which one? English Racing Green Roadster just before his record $65 billion Ponzi scheme, blah, blah, blah. Well, what year is it? Oh, 58 Aston Martin Mark III drophead coupe. 58 Aston Martin Mark III drophead coupe. Yeah, big deal. You know, by today's standards, most of those cars are not really that great. The limited production convertible is set to go under the hammer in August, with the proceeds going to pay back Bernie Madoff's burned investors. It will be offered for sale at RM Auctions' annual sale of vintage sports cars in Monterey, California. I don't know. What do you make of a story like that? He paid $270,000 for the Aston Martin months before his record Ponzi scheme collapsed in December of 08. That's Madoff's brother, Peter, by the way. He tooled around Palm Beach, Florida in the 1958 Aston Martin Mark II Dropkick Coupe, but gave it up in a deal with a trustee representative early this year. Would you want a car like that? You really want that? That's something like when you grew up in the 50s, you know, Hugh Hefner, Playboy, you know, who still wants that? You really would want an old Aston Martin? Even the new ones don't do. You want to talk about cars for a minute. The new Aston Martins, they look like Toyota Celicas, actually. The grills are nice from the front, but from the rear, they're very disappointing. They look like a Toyota Celica. They've lost all of that cachet that they used to have, James Bond and stuff like that. I'd rather talk about cars for a few minutes. Bored of politics, I swear to you. I'm falling asleep here. I got a cold. I had a big lunch, too. I had a business meeting for lunch, so I violated my diet. I can't help it. If I go to a business lunch, which is very rare, I usually violate my diet. I use it as an excuse as a party. So all of these very, very serious people are sitting around the table, very nice people. And I immediately ask for a pizza to start the meal in the Italian restaurant. I can't help myself. It's a weakness. If somebody could invent a medical something that prevents you from eating pizza, boy, I would take it in a minute. But I love the stuff. I just don't like old Aston Martins. I mean, you look at them. It's like an old Jaguar. Would I still want a 1959 Jaguar? Can you drive them? They stink. They emit fumes beyond belief. They're nice with an Abarth exhaust. I remember those days. Wire wheels, this and that. But who wants to drive around in a car like that, like a Strunge? I mean, you wind up looking like Anthony Weiner driving around in one of those cars, don't you think? Like, what? It's weird. I own a sports car. I'm ashamed to even drive it. I take it out at night when no one could see me. I feel embarrassed to be in a sports car. I like a four-door car that no one could see me in. I don't understand why people want to be seen in a car anymore. All right, if you have a sports car, get it with black glass so no one can see you. Do you actually think that driving an expensive sports car makes people like this want to be you? Honest to God, I mean, I look, I'm not lying to you. I own a Ferrari F430. It's a nice car. I love it. But I don't really drive it that much. I don't like little cars to begin with. It's too small for me. So it sits in a garage. It's nice to look at. And I didn't take it with your money, so you want to get jealous, you could do anything you want. I own a big boat. I didn't take it from your money. I earned it. Everything I bought on it with honest money. But I don't understand why anybody would want those older sports cars. What's the big deal? What, do you want to fix it again, Tony, from the 50s too? Fiat, you want a Fiat. Somebody would buy a used Fiat. I look, to each his own. Wisconsin, John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, great to talk to you, and like you, I'm bored with politics too, so I'd rather talk about something near and dear to both our hearts, which is boating.
Yes.
One point in time, you had a radio show, and you were talking about your boats, and one of them, I think, was like a 26- or 27-foot Ranger tug.
Yeah, I have a 22-foot Ranger tug with a three-cylinder, 29-horsepower Yanmar diesel, the best engine I've ever owned.
Oh, I agree on the Yanmar, Dr. Savage. What, do you know what the pitch of the prop is? I'm trying to fix up an old 25-foot cruiser.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I don't have that technical information. It's a honey of a boat. I bought this one. It's a runabout. It looks like a miniature tugboat, and it's small. I mean, it's just for a runabout thing. It's one of the most enjoyable machines I've ever owned. You know why? Low maintenance, starts up every time you run it, you spray it down, and you walk away from it. You know, I have a bigger boat that I really absolutely am crazy about, but it's a high-maintenance item. I just had the wood done, varnish, the rails on the big Grand Banks. It took like 2 months to have it done right, between sanding and putting on the coat and taking it. The woman who did it took almost 2 months to do it.
Was that the boat you're standing on the cover of the Savage Nation with the bay in the background?
No. That was actually a charter boat at a deceased friend's party, God rest her soul. And my son, who has the best eye I've ever seen, took that picture of me on the Savage Nation. It was just one of those happenstance photos. That's an astounding picture of me, where the Golden Gate Bridge is just behind my head in the shape of a cross. It's amazing. So what are you restoring, a wooden boat?
No, it's an old 32-year-old fiberglass cabin cruiser, 25 feet to run around the Bay of Green Bay in.
So what is it? You want to know what kind of propeller to use on it?
Yeah, what pitch of the prop? I tried a 19...
Well, what kind of boat is it? When, who was the manufacturer? It's not Chris Craft, was it?
Cruisers.
So you call the company and you find out the original prop. What engine do you have on it?
350.
What, a 350 short block, or it's a gas engine, I assume, right?
That's right, yep.
Yeah, I'm so unfamiliar with gas engines. I know a little bit about diesels only from having used them, and I'm crazy about them. They're amazing. 1-800-449-8255. Okay, now I'm going to get the car people who are going to get mad at me. Washington State, John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. I live in the Spokane area, and about 100 miles west of Spokane is a town called Moses Lake. And through word of mouth, I heard a guy over there passed away. He had a foundry. He's got a great car collection. He's got a museum over there, and I wandered over there a couple days ago. And they let me in, and he's just selling these things word of mouth. They're not advertised, and there's just anything from 1914 Model A's, Model T's, all the way up to there's a 69 Super Sport Camaro in there that was an Indy Pace car.
And does he have any of the cars I mentioned, Aston Martin, Jaguars?
No, most of them are all American cars. There's some Nash's. I mean, there's everything in there. There's Hudson's.
You know, I absolutely admire people who can restore machinery of any kind. I have a real fixation on that. I love American workers who can take, I don't care if it's an old jukebox or a candy machine, and restore it. It's incredible. The same with cars. I love seeing people restore old machinery. I'm just saying driving them isn't the greatest kick on earth, if you know what I mean. Not in this day and age. That's all. That was my point. I mean, I actually like to own a business that restores things because it's a satisfaction in America to fix things that were once beautiful and functional and, you know, restore them to what they once looked like. I have a 65 Caddy, for example. I took it out of the garage. I bought this car 10 years ago, and it's a 65 Caddy with 54,000 miles on a convertible. I'm thinking of selling it and putting the money into my legal defense fund. You know why? It runs fine. It's not perfect, but it's an original. I don't have any use for it. It takes up a whole half of a garage.
Savage.
Who has declared a war on religion? Who has tried to force religious organizations to give birth control to their employees? Obama. Well, they say they've compromised. Do you believe it? Never. Leftists never compromise. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation is Bishop William Laurie, the U.S. Catholic Bishop's Chairman for Religious Liberty. Bishop Laurie, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, nice to be with you today, and good to have an opportunity to talk with you.
Well, please give my audience your thoughts on the so-called compromise on contraception from the Obama administration.
Well, Michael, I don't think it's a compromise at all, and at two levels. At the level of principle, the principle of religious liberty, the mandate to provide objectionable services still remains, and so it still represents an intrusion of government into the internal affairs, not only of the Catholic Church, but of various religious groups. It also there is also retained the narrow definition of churches and churches' missions. So as a result, at the level of principle, the so-called compromise doesn't work. And by the way, the idea that we would take our God-given religious liberty and subject it to a compromise seems to be a little bit out of step anyway. And then at the level of practicality, there are many, many problems. And if I could perhaps just cite several of them. One would be that many religious entities are self-insured. So the idea that the insurer provides the objectionable service and not the church, well, that doesn't work if you're self-insured. It'd be like I'd be on one side of the desk saying, no, we can't provide that. That'd be the church side of the desk. And then I go on the other side of the desk, the insurer side, and say, oh, but we can now provide this. So that obviously doesn't work. There is such a thing as religious insurers, and this does nothing for them, not to mention the conscience rights of individual employers and individuals who don't want to provide or receive these kinds of services. So I do not think that the so-called compromise is a compromise, and I don't think it works either at the level of principle or at the level of practicality.
Well, this is an attack, an attempt to take over religion, isn't it?
I believe the entire mandate is an egregious attack on religion. Back when the Affordable Health Care Act was being debated, among the things the U.S. Catholic bishops argued strongly for was adequate conscience protection. And had that been built into the bill, a lot of this, I think, could have been avoided. When the government reaches in to the internal life of a church and says, you must provide this either directly or indirectly, that's a violation of religious liberty. It's indefensible.
Yeah, but will this really hurt Obama's chances with Catholics in the upcoming election, or are they going to just vote in lockstep for a Democrat?
Oh, I'm a pastor of souls, and I don't have a political crystal ball, so it's really hard for me to say that. And our aim is to defend religious liberty. We're not just looking at this election cycle. We're looking for the long haul, and it seems to me that Catholics and people of faith everywhere ought to join together and use this as a wake-up call to ensure that religious liberty continues to be recognized as a gift from God, not a grant from the state, and to ensure that it is protected not only by the Bill of Rights, but protected in law for years to come. That's why we're very much behind the Rights of Conscience Act that Representative Fortenberry has introduced.
What do you think is the Obama administration's real motivation behind this mandate on contraception?
It's hard for me to say, but I could make a more general comment, and it's this. Religious liberty is lost, I would say, in culture before it is lost in law. In other words, when religion itself becomes less important in a culture, when it is perceived to be weakened, or when other rights begin to supersede such a fundamental right as religious liberty, then it's in danger of being swept away. And I think it is the responsibility of both political parties to defend religious liberty. Religious liberty is not a partisan issue. It truly is an American issue. It is as precious as the Bill of Rights, and we ought to all be working together to uphold it. Otherwise, we won't be the same country that we were founded to be.
Do you think this administration has done permanent damage to religious liberty in this country? I do.
Certainly, there have been some major challenges to religious liberty during the past several years by this administration. One very surprising affront to religious liberty was the Hosanna Tabor case, when the Solicitor General argued that there really should be no such thing as the ministerial exception. That is to say, the constitutionally recognized right of churches to choose their own ministers. Fortunately, 9-0, the Supreme Court upheld the ministerial exception. That that such a position would be argued by the administration has to cause concern. Another issue with regard to religious liberty would be the denial of contracts to migration and refugee services, an arm of the bishops that serves victims of human trafficking. And why? Because this organization refuses to provide abortion. Something similar with regard to Catholic relief services. There the case is contraception. And now the mandate. So we do feel that religious liberty is under assault at the federal level, but also, of course, at the state level, where there are state laws like same-sex marriage laws and that have driven Catholic charities out of adoption and foster care services, and many other violations besides. We have a lot of work to do and a lot of praying to do.
Bishop Laurie, God bless you, and thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's good to talk to you, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity to air these issues fully.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I'm going to take a caller right now from Kansas. Mark, you're on the one and only Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it is a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I've been listening for a long time. I wanted to say I'm just amazed in this day and age, in 2011, with someone as learned as yourself, who just is one of the smartest people I listen to, can even believe in a God today. I mean, it shocks me, actually. That
I like that. I like shocking you. Do you find it offensive that a man of intelligence would believe in God?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's absolutely never been any proof of it. And in fact, if you're, you know, Catholic or someone who believes in the Bible, it was admittedly written by man. I mean, at least Muslims and other religions, you know, try to act like it was, you know, that their word was written by God. But I mean, even if you're, I was raised.
Okay, I've heard you discuss. I don't reject what you have to say, nor am I going to here to try to turn you into a religious person. But let me ask you something: do you believe Albert Einstein was super intelligent?
Of course.
Okay. Are you aware that Albert Einstein was a great believer in God?
Yes, I am.
Okay. No. I don't know, because a lot of atheists are confused because of the college posters of Einstein with the hair and with the tongue out that they put on campuses in order to debase his image. He said the more he studied the perimeters of the universe, the more he came to believe there had to be a God.
Right. But I also believe that religion is something that can shape you throughout your entire life. Things that he had gone through had, for some reason, you know, he had questions that could not be answered, and so he turned to religion, much like yourself. You had said that, you know, you had discovered him when you had hit the bottom. I think that, you know, like some people out there, like, you know, I hate to bring up his name, but like Jesse Ventura, or even like George Carlin used to say about God, that really it's something that if you have this hole in what you know, think is life, and you have no answers for that, you have to go to this, you know, invisible man that is supposedly up there watching everything we do and all the evil that...
No, I've heard the atheistic arguments, and it's all, you know, it's sort of hollow, the whole thing, because have you not had black moments in your life where there was nowhere to go? Who do you turn to? What do you turn to?
With religion, you're told that God only helps...
No, but I'm asking you, as a believing atheist, you believe in the religion of atheism, which is believing in nothing. And nothingness, but you actually believe in something which is nothingness when you think about it.
I more believe in people or something physical than something that.
But have you ever fallen down a ravine and broken your leg and been laying there with no one to rescue you? Who would you call?
There's no one to call. I mean, what good would calling God do? I mean, someone hears you.
So you'd pick up your cell phone and you wouldn't dial G-O-D, you dial 911. I get it.
I mean, I don't think it's an argument. You know, I don't even want to say it's an argument. It's really just your belief system. You know,
that's right. You're not going to convince me not to believe in a supernatural being that controls the universe. But you got to understand this about me. I do not believe God is omnipotent. I believe God is omnipresent. You know, there's a big difference.
That he's everywhere at all times, but he doesn't know everything.
See, many years ago, I went through a whole soul searching where I was about to become a total atheist. And I'd ask myself, how could a little child suffer from leukemia like this? How could a little child have cancer and suffer so violently? Why is it that evil men seem to thrive and get away with murder and rape and killing hundreds of thousands of people, while the innocent children, sometimes you go to a back ward of cancer and you see suffering amongst children? I said, what kind of God is there in heaven with a thing like this? And I found a book on this. It was written by I believe it was a Reform rabbi, and he was more a philosopher, and he said that if he believed God was omnipotent but not omnipresent, he would cease believing because he would not accept the God that was so cruel.
I guess I got to apologize. And when you say omnipresent, you mean that he's everywhere at all times, or what? I mean, what's the difference between?
I believe that God's work is apparent everywhere. If I'm sitting in my radio studio looking out of the window and I see a bush, and I see an airplane, and I see the breeze, and I see a bird, okay? These are all manifestations of God to me.
Okay.
To me. It doesn't mean I see a spiritual being walking around who's going to wind up in my living room. I'm not Jimmy Carter. I don't believe he's going to show up in a white robe in my living room and I have to drink strychnine in order to prove it.
That's all the proof you need that there is a God, is because there are these things that are present that you see every day.
Yes. In other words, how could this ever happen by accident?
I think that there's many, many things, and I think you'd agree with this, there's many, many things in the world that cannot be explained by us. I think that man is, pretty low on the...
Wait, but you just touched again on something you've struggled with all your life, and I agree with you. There are many things we can't understand. So how do you turn? What do you do at that moment when you reach a point you can't understand? What do you turn to? I don't understand it, and that's enough for you?
Well, no. I try to study as much as I can of things that have actually happened and people that have lived in the world and experienced what is to experience in the world and maybe what they're... I kind of see it as a study that you spend your whole life trying to...
Look, we're not going to change each other's mind. A belief is a faith. That's all there is. It's a faith and period. You can't prove it. It's a faith. That's why it's called faith-based.
In this horrible, disgusting world with what goes on every day, how can you have faith in this being? Even if there is a God, say that there is a God. If there is a God, how could he be such an incredibly cruel being to allow what happen in the world? You know how there was...
I have asked the same question. I've gone right there. I'm not different than Mother Teresa, who doubted God's existence at times in her life, but still trekked along on the path of God. Because there's no alternative. I cannot take myself off this path at this point in my life. It's impossible.
The story of Noah's Ark, obviously. Flood, because everything was so evil in the world that he needed to wash it clean, basically, and start over. You can't tell me that after all these thousands of years after that things are not 10,000 times worse than they were back then.
But who says there's not going to be another flood?
Right, there could be, but it's been so long. I mean, there's just no...
Yeah, it's been a long time. That's why I have survival food on a hillside house somewhere.
I'm with you. I mean, I do think it's probably coming, but I think we're more likely to destroy ourselves before that actually happens. But I just...
Yeah, that's a whole separate discussion. I want to ask you something. You've got my curiosity. Were you raised in any religion?
I was raised as a Catholic. I went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. I was confirmed in the Catholic religion, although at confirmation I was right towards the time of not, of really falling out of belief.
But what made you a lapsed Catholic? Something happened in your life? What happened?
I was the weird kid that was like 9 or 10 years old in Catholic. If you're in Catholic schooling, you go to church probably 2 or 3 times a week. And so I would sit in church, and the priest would want us to be involved, so he would ask us questions, and I would be the weird kid that stood up and said, okay, look, if there is a God, then, why does these bad things happen, blah, 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 and they never had
yes.
an answer for me.
All right, no, hey, that happens in every religion. Every religion has kids who ask these questions. You're not the weird one. You're the smart one. You're the one who challenges authority. I understand that, but I've been that way all my life.
Right. I felt weird because there was no other child. And in fact, I was laughed at for even.
See, here's the thing about it. Do you do things in your life that you're ashamed of? Things that you really wish you didn't do?
Of course.
Okay. So who do you apologize to for that?
There is nobody to apologize to.
Don't you do any mea culpa saying, God, I'm sorry, I've sinned. I can't help myself.
No.
Well, what do you say to yourself? What do you say to yourself at that point?
You know what? I don't. I don't have those kind of internal monologues. I basically try to live my life. You know, I feel that the Ten Commandments are a great way to live. I think that, you know, all of the things that they list are things that you should probably try to do.
Did you say the Six Commandments? You're sounding like Anthony Weiner now.
No, I said the Ten Commandments.
I'm joking. Come on. Because most Democrats believe in four commandments.
If you listen to George Carlin, it should really be like two, because a lot of them overlap.
No, but most Democrats believe in four commandments. Well, it's an interesting conversation we've had so far, Mark. We haven't changed each other's position, and nor did we try to. We were like gentlemen having a discussion, which is the object of a discussion, which is not really to move the other guy, but just hear the other guy out. Would you agree with me on that?
Absolutely, yeah. I listen to you every day. I do love your show a lot, and I really do believe that you are just an incredibly intelligent person. I can't believe the radio is where you landed up, you know, from being a professor and being all these things that you could have been or have done in your life, that you didn't go into a different path, and you're basically...
Well, I know that it's very interesting, but I was blocked in my desires to make a life in academia because I was a white male, although my credentials were the best on earth. They were only choosing people who were of a certain, let's say, stripe. But that's a long time ago. I have a large classroom every day with 8 to 10 million listeners a week. You can do the math. I mean, the audience is bigger in one probably 10-minute period than I would have had in my entire life as a professor. So things worked out very well. Also, the sale of the books is great.
Savage.